Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, oh, toaster, don't you put the burn on me. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and our other regular host, Lauren Vogelbaum, is not with us today, but she will be back soon.
Yep.
And so today, you know, a lot of times, Jonathan, we talk about some kind of world-changing propositions.
Oh, sure, like planetary defense.
Exactly. Artificial intelligence, radical life extension, space elevators, colonizing the moon.
Right. The whole idea of the singularity where we transform into the post-human species where we're part man, part machine, all awesome.
But sometimes we focus on the little things too. And so one question we often like to ask is, in this age of innovation, are some of our simplest and most reliable devices and machines actually things that still can be improved? Or have we already reached peak toaster?
Right.
Have we already reached peak vacuum cleaner?
Sure.
And today the one we wanted to look at was the oven.
Yeah.
The workhorse of your kitchen. Standard, basic, pretty simple machine. Is there any way that ovens could be better than they are today? And if there is a way they could be better than they are today, is it worth it? Should we try to improve this device?
Right. And just as a peek behind the curtain, guys, what happens sometimes is that Joe and I will meet up with some of the other folks behind Forward Thinking, and we have these big pitch meetings like one every few months, maybe like every once a quarter or something like that. We'll get together and we just start throwing out ideas about various topics that we can cover. And once in a while, someone throws out something that on the surface is, you know, you're like, wow, why would we even cover that? And then you think, well, no, this is a valid question. Can we take something as established as the oven and make measurable improvements, not just tiny improvements in efficiency, which is important.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Energy efficiency is very important. You want to have good efficiency. You want to have a good ability to cook food thoroughly and properly. But how much better can we get? And it turned out that this was kind of an interesting question to sort of rattle around.
Yeah, totally. So let's take a look at the oven. Let's get the old oven out and pry the door open and poke it and prod it and see if there's anything that can be done with this old hunky beast.
Okay, and now the first question we have to ask is, how does an oven do what it does? How does an oven actually cook food? And we're talking specifically about the oven compartment, not the you know, stovetop or anything.
Yeah.
But really the oven itself.
Well, you may remember from elementary school science class that there are three main ways you're going to get heat transferred from one place to another via physics. So one is going to be radiation, radiant heat. And this does occur in ovens. This is heating via electromagnetic radiation, the infrared part of the spectrum. It's the same way the sun heats the Earth. There's nothing in between the Earth and the sun but a bunch of space. And yet these electromagnetic rays can reach us and make our planet nice and warm.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same sense, the heating elements in the walls of your oven can radiate heat throughout, sending these infrared rays towards your frozen lasagna and bringing it to a nice bubbly finish.
All right, so that's one of three, but you said there are two more, right? So
right, well, of course, there's also conduction.
Oh, sure, conduction. This is a pretty simple idea. It's where you've got the transfer of heat between stuff that's in direct contact with one another, right? So conducting heat, if you were to put some sort of conductive material onto a hot surface, that heat would then pass into the conductive material you've put down there. And some stuff conducts heat really well, like most metals.
Yeah.
They're great conductors for heat. Some stuff does not conduct heat very well. That's what we use as insulators. Things like, you know, like the rubber you might use for a pot holder type thing or
maybe
lines.
Air, actually, which air is one of the funny things that most of the cooking by touching that happens in your oven happens because your food is touching air that is hot.
Yeah.
Because the oven gets the air hot. But air is not a good conductor of heat. One way to make it a better conductor of heat is to augment that through convection. Convection is the third form of transfer of heat energy. And this happens when you transfer heat energy through a moving fluid like air or water. So you have currents of circulation that move hot fluid from one place to another. A convection oven then in most cases uses fans to circulate hot air coming off of the heating elements.
And right.
By doing this, the food usually cooks faster and more evenly.
Yeah, you get that distribution of heat as opposed to, you know, if you have one source of heat, then obviously whatever part of the food is closest to that one source is more likely to cook faster than the part that's furthest away.
Yeah.
So by using convection and distributing that heat a little more evenly, you create something where you're not going to end up with a lasagna that is bubbling hot on one side but still frozen on the other.
Right.
Which, you know,
I'm though you sure might still get that because ovens are stupid.
The ovens are stupid. And sometimes even when you do everything correctly, the oven itself doesn't.
Yeah. And we mentioned the idea of convection ovens. These are ovens that are designed specifically to blow that hot air around and get it circulating. But even in a standard non-convection oven, there is some natural convection that happens just
because of
uneven heating.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a little bit of limited airflow.
Right. Right. There's no such thing as an oven where the air is completely stationary and isn't moving at all. I mean, that's physics would tell us that that's not going to happen.
Right.
But then we have one other that we can mention very, very briefly. We're not really going to focus on it too much in this episode, but of course there are microwave ovens.
Right.
Microwave ovens don't use any of these methods to heat up food. What they use is, well, they use the radiant method, but in this case, it's radiating microwaves, not infrared.
Yeah, it's a different kind. So instead of transferring heat directly to the food, it transfers energy to the food.
Right.
A different kind of energy, electromagnetic energy in the form of microwave radiation, which because water is a polar molecule, it makes water molecules in your food start to vibrate furiously, and this turns into heat.
Yeah, exactly. That motion is essentially heat, right? Molecular movement is heat. If you were to talk about the complete absence of molecular movement, that's when you get to absolute zero. So making molecules move more means they're heating up. So using your microwave, it ends up that energy ends up getting absorbed by water, by fats, by sugars. That's what ends up really heating up food. Theoretically, it's cooking all the way, like all the parts are cooking at the same time, although that doesn't necessarily happen in practice because of lots of different stuff, including things like microwave interference. Sometimes it depends upon the thickness of the food, but because obviously if it's thick enough, then the middle never gets penetrated by those microwaves and doesn't cook through.
Whether you put an old computer in the microwave with your food.
Yeah, that also would definitely factor in. I mean, I don't typically do that, but I'm learning more about you, Joe. But yeah, that's one of those ovens that we're probably not going to concentrate on too much in this episode. But figured we might as well, you know, get it out of the way. We're really focusing on the traditional oven, especially in Western Hemisphere.
You know, in the course of reading up for this episode, I did read about at least one oven that combines traditional oven heating with microwaves.
I've heard of such things, and I fear them.
It sounds pretty weird.
Sounds like a Frankenstein's monster of ovens.
Okay, well, so one question that I think, one reason, actually, I would say, that the question of have we reached peak oven
right.
is kind of interesting, is that ovens have been around for a long time. I mean, it's obvious that we have not yet reached peak cell phone.
Right.
People are going to keep redesigning cell phones and obviously making them better. It just hasn't been around all that long.
No, that's been around since like the 1970s.
Right. But we've had ovens for, I mean, at least in basic concept, versions of ovens for a really long time.
Right. We've had ovens as we understand them for centuries. We've had ovens as in a general concept for millennia.
Yeah.
So depending on your definition of ovens, they date way back to prehistoric times. Now, in this case, you have to be pretty liberal with your description of what an oven is. In prehistoric times, it might include a pit, and you would fill that pit with hot coals, which would have ash on them that helps insulate some of the heat.
Yeah.
And then you would wrap your food in some sort of protective covering, most often something like leaves. And you would put those on top of the coals, and then you would bury it for a while and let it cook.
Traps the heat in.
And then you dig it up, and you got your nice, tasty food wrapped in charred leaves. And this is, in at least some interpretations, a type of oven, although clearly not something you would go to your local hardware store and say, hey, can I see your pits filled with charcoal. Like, it's not going to happen.
Well, no, I mean, this sounds like a nice way. You get a kind of smolder going on. It's different than cooking over an open flame. This
right.
might be your earliest ways to do something more akin to barbecuing or smoking, where you get a kind of low and slow heat.
Yeah. Ancient civilizations used stone or brick ovens fired with wood to bake bread.
Mm-hmm.
So the Greeks, the Romans, these civilizations that were really kind of the forefront of that technology, they made those sort of ovens. The same sort of stuff you would find in a pizzeria that has the wood-fired oven in the back. It's really meant for like a pretty high temperature oven. And then you had variations on brick ovens that continued all the way through the medieval times and early Renaissance. By the 1700s, people had started to adopt cast iron stoves, and those became quite popular. By the 1800s, people were starting to rely on coal as fuel as opposed to wood. And then the first gas stoves appeared in the early 19th century. So around the mid-1820s, that's when you first started seeing them. And in the late 1800s, inventors began to experiment with electric ovens. Although at the time, during that experimentation, they were not terribly efficient. It required a lot of energy to generate the electricity necessary to heat up a heating element inside an electrical oven. It was not really practical for the first like decade or so of experimentation.
Right.
And it took some time for that to find traction. But then once it did, it became quite popular.
Yeah, I just had a question. I didn't come across this, but I wonder if early oven technology had any dangerous exploding periods.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about an article we both read where one of the things that they mention about how ovens can be inefficient is that the air expands on the inside, right? So
right.
it needs to have a place for it to vent out of, or else that expansion, you know, the oven has to contain it.
Yeah.
And so you essentially have a pressure bomb if you don't have any kind of way of. And I'm sure there were instances of ovens going boom. And we probably don't know much about them because people weren't around to to tell what happened afterward. Just that whatever place they were in burned down.
Worst pie recipe ever.
Right. Man, talk about a Pop-Tart. Whackety schmackety doo. So, the microwave came about in the mid-1900s, like 1946, 47 was pretty much when an engineer discovered the principle behind microwave ovens. This yeah. was an engineer who noticed that whenever he was working near a microwave antenna, the candy bar that he had would melt. And so he said, huh, there seems to be something going on here. And eventually that became the basis of the microwave oven, which, by the way, took some time for people to adopt because there were some fears about the nature of the radiation.
Oh, yeah.
Which still happens today. You'll hear people say, don't stand in front of that microwave.
It really got a lot better when they started putting doors on them.
Yeah, exactly. The early microwave ovens where you had to stand in front with a ping pong paddle and just bat them back as hard as you could. Those days are over.
Also the ones where you had to stick your head inside to check on the food. Those weren't very good.
The old Hansel and Gretel models. Yeah, man, those were the days. So over time, we've seen lots of different variations on ovens, some of which were clearly kind of gimmicky.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't necessarily a real advance in the technology, but it was something to set it apart from a competing oven so that you could sell more of them.
Well, and that's something to keep in mind today, because I think that same question will apply to a lot of the advances that we bring up.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the stuff like, clearly the older ovens, the ones that were the precursors to today's ovens, didn't have certain things that we rely on today.
Right.
And one of those is just the thermostat inside the oven, which tells you that it's what allows you to preheat an oven to a specific temperature, as opposed to just, well, throw some more wood on and then hopefully we can get this hot enough. Or if it's too hot, then maybe we put some ash on there to cool down the fire. Like that was a very inexact way of going about it.
Right.
These days, you get a new oven, you've got a little digital counter, you program in what temperature you want the oven to preheat, and it does it all for you, right?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty simple machine. You know, it's like a switch.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
it a is switch. A switch.
It says if it gets up to the temperature you've set, then it's time to turn it off.
Right, and so it stops the cycle, the heating cycle at that point. And then if the temperature, or when, not if, when the temperature drops down to a certain threshold, then the thermostat switches the whole system back on again.
Yeah.
So it heats back up. So it's a constant heating and cooling process. It's not necessarily doing it very fast. These cycles can last a good long while.
Yeah.
But it's all meant to try and keep the food at the general temperature that you chose. General being somewhat of a generous term depending upon your oven thermostat.
Right. Well, depending on your oven, and really this will apply to all, I mean, no oven is going to have perfect precision on the temperature inside. There's
right.
going to be some variation. Some parts of the oven are going to be hotter than other parts. And even in general, the average across the oven is not going to be exactly what you set it to.
And then you've got other factors, right? Like your altitude. Like there are other things that come into how long you need to cook things at what temperature. But just speaking from a general sense, like let's say you're at sea level, all things being equal, yes, your oven could end up having a thermostat that is not terribly accurate or has lost accuracy over time. And it could mean that when you try and cook stuff, even though you're following all the directions and you're absolutely certain you're doing so, maybe you're undercooking stuff or overcooking stuff. If a thermostat fails, it could potentially lead to something really awful, like a fire.
Oh.
Yeah, because if they
never thought of that.
If it never detects that it's gotten too hot, it just keeps getting hotter.
Yeah, I've never thought of that. I would just have to assume that modern ovens have some kind of safety measure in place to prevent that, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's a possibility. It's not necessarily a likelihood because there usually are fail-safes involved, but it is one of those things, especially the earlier ovens with thermostats, that you had to worry about. Now, granted, most of the time, thermostats aren't, like, going super haywire, right? But if you suspect that yours is inaccurate or becoming less accurate over time, then you can do some various tests to make sure. Like, there are tester units you can have, which essentially are thermometers with timers,
mm-hmm.
where you can put them in for, like, half an hour to see how much variation in the temperature there is over at least three cycles of your oven heating up and cooling down. And then what you do is you take the average amount of temperature there, and that'll tell you how close or far off from the programmed temperature you actually are.
Uh-huh.
And if it's pretty far off, it may mean that you need to have your thermostat calibrated.
Yeah.
Which could require a visit from a repair person.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you have the manual and you feel confident in your skills to take off a panel and work on a thermostat, then possibly you could do it yourself. I would never attempt such a thing because I like having people who are certified in that kind of stuff do it for me. That way, if they break it, I have some recourse.
Yeah.
But
anyway. And you can save face.
Yes, that's also very important. So another thing you can always do, obviously, is use food thermometers to keep track of how your food is doing.
And this is probably a good idea either way, because the oven temperature is measuring, even if it's measuring it more or less accurately, it's measuring the oven temperature, not the food temperature.
Right.
And what matters is the food temperature.
Right. And if you're cooking a turkey and you think, oh, I did this last year and it was perfect, I'm going to do it exactly the same way. You have to remember, turkeys aren't all identical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have one that has thicker muscle tissue so that, you know, it's going to take a little longer for the heat to be able to cook that food, that meat, then clearly you need to keep an eye on that sort of stuff. So even as there can be variation in ovens, there's also obviously a huge amount of variation in the food we put in our ovens.
Mm-hmm. Or even something as simple as not remembering which rack you put it on.
Yes.
Putting it a different place in the oven can make a difference.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Putting something on the top rack versus the bottom rack actually does make a difference. These are all factors that you have to take into account. Or how about the fact that you've got stuff like a window in your oven? Typically, I mean, most people do, right? So that you can look through the little window and stare and say, does that look golden brown to you?
Jonathan, stop. Tell me the definition of golden brown. How is it different than golden or brown?
I think golden brown, the definition is how can we make something sound so enticing as to convince people to buy this oven?
Cooking all foods to a delicious golden brown.
I might be a little cynical because of certain life choices that are coming up to me right now, which involves buying big appliances.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
Jonathan, are you in the market for an oven right now?
Not right now, but please don't call me if you're an oven salesperson because I'm already dealing with salespeople right now. Anyway, that the idea being that the window is a nice thing to have, and windows typically don't allow a whole lot of heat to escape. They're double paned usually. If the seal on your door is fine, that's not allowing a lot of heat to escape. That's not a problem.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that they're not like the walls of your oven, right?
No.
What are the walls of your oven supposed to do?
They're supposed to radiate that heat into the chamber of the oven, right?
Yeah. They absorb the heat that's created by the heating element, mm-hmm. and then they're supposed to send it right back in.
Yeah, but the window doesn't really do that. Mm-hmm. The window's ability to do that is much more limited compared to the walls of the oven. So you have this zone on the walls of your oven, or on a wall of your oven, that is not equivalent to the others, which again can lead to some uneven heating and cooking.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's necessarily a huge issue for most types of stuff you're going to be doing in the oven, unless you're cooking at particularly high temperatures.
Yeah.
So if you're baking something and the baking temperature is pretty high, then you might run into some problems with this where the unevenness actually comes into play, whereas at the lower temperatures it's not such a big deal. So if you're like doing something where you're just roasting some vegetables or something along those lines, it's not a big problem. But if you're baking a cake or something, then it might be.
Well, this issue brings us to one of the main things we're going to talk about in this episode, which is an article that addressed this very topic.
Yeah.
It was published in June 2014 in the IEEE Spectrum.
Yeah.
By Nathan Myhrvold and W. Waite Gibbs. And it's essentially the same basic topic we're talking about today. Can you design a better oven? And their answer is, oh, yeah.
Yeah. I get the feeling as I read this article that they're that they could be like the two guys in front of a group of people just doing that fast paced pitch back and forth.
Uh-huh.
There's like a whole series of Kids in the Hall sketches that are in that vein, but
ovens,
right? Yeah. They're the worst. Tell me about it.
A lot of times when I read about Nathan Myhrvold, I feel like I'm getting a very fast pitch on something.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I loved this article, uh-huh. right? I really enjoyed reading it, and I enjoyed the proposals made in it. I question how easy some of them are. I mean, they are pretty glib with some of the explanations of how we can improve the oven without going into too much actual detail of how that would work.
Yeah.
But it's fun to read. So let's talk about some of them.
Well, yeah, I think I should let you know just basically how they start off.
Yeah.
First sentence, most of us bake, roast, and broil our food using a technology that was invented 5,000 years ago for drying mud bricks, the oven.
Already firing out of the gate with a real hard-hitting approach.
That's a good opener, though. Yeah. It evokes this feeling of disgust. It's like, right. I don't want to eat mud bricks.
What are we in? The Stone Age? Not hardly.
But they do go on to talk about some of the problems with ovens today. And, I am not an oven engineer, but based on the way they explain them, most of these things make sense to me. So number one, they argue that the oven is not well designed to cook food equally well under varying conditions.
Right. For all the things that we use ovens to do, our ovens are okay at doing them all, but not perfect at doing all of them.
Right. So they're not going to cook food equally well depending on the load, meaning, you know, how much food is in the oven.
Sure.
It's going to vary if it's full versus mostly empty.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the placement of the food, you might just get better cooking on the top rack than on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And frequency of checking. How much are you checking on the food, opening the door, looking inside to see?
Yeah. Opening the door is a bad idea in general. We'll talk a little more about that a little bit later. But yeah, it's so tempting to do because one, you want to get a chance to look at it, and two, you want to release that sweet, sweet aroma of whatever it is that's in the oven and fill the whole kitchen with that scent.
You should resist that temptation.
It's an incredibly pleasurable sensation, which is why I have to remind myself not to do that very thing of opening the oven door every 5 minutes. I've been guilty of it before, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I have too. Especially when the food you're working on is really good. I've got one thing. I won't share my whole recipe on the podcast, but one of the things I really love making in the oven lately is an oven baked all-day red sauce, like a tomato sauce.
Oh, wow.
And when you bake it in the oven instead of on the stovetop, you get some browning on the surface of the sauce.
A little caramelization.
Yeah, you do it on a low heat, but you just leave it going in the oven for a long time, and it makes it really rich and delicious. It's awesome.
I'm going to ask you for that recipe later. We're not here to talk about our recipes.
Right, right.
That's
Sorry,
our IBM.
Folks.
That's a Chef Watson episode. You can go listen to some crazy recipes in that show.
Okay, so moving on to more of the problems with ovens they mentioned. Another one is that the oven wastes a lot of heat energy.
Mm-hmm.
We alluded to some of this earlier. For one example, air is a very poor conductor of heat, and yet it's what has to conduct the heat from the heating element to the walls of the oven, and then the walls from the oven retain the heat that allows the oven to maintain its temperature. So as we said earlier, as the air heats up, it expands.
Right.
It takes up more space in order to keep the oven from exploding as the air expands. You've got to vent some of that air out of the oven, which is just purely wasted energy unless you're also trying to heat your kitchen
right.
at the same time. Another admission I'll make is that I've done that before I was in graduate school.
I think about so one of the things, it's funny that you put lasagna in as the example earlier. One of the things my mom used to make that I thought was amazing was a phenomenal lasagna. Like she just made a killer lasagna. And my birthday's in the summer. And she would ask me, like, do you want me to make that lasagna for your birthday? I'm like, yes, please, because it's awesome, which was a huge thing. I mean, it was several hours to put this all together and get it to work, right? It's a multi-stage process. And, of course, the last part of it was putting the lasagna in the oven and allowing it to bake. My birthday's in late June.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in rural Georgia. It would turn the house into just a, like, you might as well open the doors. You're actually going to get cooler opening the doors in late June in Georgia than you would having the air conditioner go, because it's just not going to be able to handle that. And that's tough, because you're sitting there thinking, like, wow, this is actually energy that we could be using to cook the food, but instead it's being wasted on making the house almost uninhabitable.
Yeah. So that is a problem. Then you've also got the problem of the oven doesn't heat up as fast as it could. This is more with traditional ovens. I've tended to notice that convection ovens heat up pretty fast.
Yeah, I've got a, on mine, I have an option called rapid preheat, which turns on the convection fans and heats up much faster. And it's remarkable how much faster the rapid preheat is compared to just if I do a regular preheat.
Yeah. Another one is just generally ovens don't cook as evenly as they could, especially as they could if you had like a rotisserie or something. I mean, mm-hmm. you can have some ovens equipped with something like this.
Sure.
Then there are other things with the oven doesn't know with precision how hot it is. We mm-hmm. mentioned that. There's variable humidity, and this leads to different outcomes. And so essentially the two guys behind this article claim that that we have all the technology to fix these problems today.
Yeah, I love the idea that, again, just getting that vision of the two guys standing in front of the group just saying, the future of ovens is hot, hot, hot.
Well, Jonathan, I think it is hot, hot, hot.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might be because you've read the article as well and saw that they've talked about a lot of different proposed changes to the oven that they claim
mm-hmm.
will make the oven far more efficient and effective in cooking foods.
Yeah, well, I'm going to start with one that I either, you know, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and just say maybe I don't really understand the purpose, but I was a little iffy on this first one.
Yeah.
So one is an oven that varies its heat transfer method depending on at what temperature you're cooking. And so I'm going to read a quote by them.
Okay.
And the quote is, at 200 degrees Celsius or below, convection moves most of the heat.
All right.
But at 400 degrees Celsius, radiant energy starts doing a fair amount of the heat transfer. At 800 degrees Celsius, radiation overwhelms convection. There, they're just talking about the natural ways that that heat transfer changes at different temperatures.
Sure.
They continue, why couldn't we have an oven designed to cook primarily by convection at low temperatures that switches to radiant heat for high temperature baking? So 200 degrees Celsius, they're talking about convection there. That's 400 degrees Fahrenheit if you're used to cooking mm-hmm. Fahrenheit temperatures.
Yep.
400 degrees Celsius is 750 degrees Fahrenheit. And
yeah.
That's where it starts shifting to radiant heat.
Right.
800 degrees Celsius is like 1500 degrees Fahrenheit.
So if you're blowing glass.
unless you're operating a restaurant with like a pizza oven or some incredibly very unusually hot oven, I don't see the appeal. Like at home, who cooks at temperatures like this?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever pushed mine above 450 Fahrenheit at home because almost everything I cook requires that temperature or lower. So it'd be very rare. But then I'm also not a baker.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are some things that are very nice to have a very hot oven for. I'm not sure about 1500 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, that seems it might be a tad excessive.
But yeah, my oven does not go anywhere near 750 degrees Fahrenheit
yeah.
or 400 degrees Celsius where the radiant heat starts kicking in. So I
yeah.
don't know.
I also don't really know how they propose this works other than the fans just stop blowing for convection and the you just concentrate all the heating elements directly behind the oven walls.
Well, this could have this may be able to tie into something that comes up later in their suggestions, which is variable emittance surfaces also.
Gotcha. Well, and then they also mentioned something else that I talked about earlier, the idea that when you open that oven door, you are releasing a lot of heat, thus cooling the interior of the oven, making it less efficient over
yeah.
time, right? This idea that you really shouldn't do that. I've seen a lot of different places kind of cite, although I haven't seen the actual source of the information, that it drops the temperature by about 25 degrees Fahrenheit when you just opening the door to look in and then closing it. And that means the whole system has to warm up again. Mm-hmm. There's this inadvertent cooling that's happened. It messes things up, in other words.
Yeah. So the authors of this piece actually say that people are just always going to open the door and check. There's no way to convince them not to do it. So instead of just having an instruction manual that says, don't open the door to check, just look through the window, they say that you can protect the oven cavity from heat loss by having the door frame equipped with blowers
right.
that generate a curtain of air to prevent hot air from escaping. This would work kind of like you may have seen some cooler containers at the grocery store like this that have an air curtain that blows across the surface.
I've walked into buildings that use this,
yeah.
where they have like the air curtain just on the other side of the doors that lead into the building. And as soon as those doors open, the air curtain starts blowing down and it prevents the cold air from inside the building escaping. Again, we're in Georgia where it gets pretty hot in the summer.
Right.
So in order to reduce the energy consumption of a building, you might install something like that so that you're not constantly losing the air conditioned air and having to cool it over and over again.
Yeah.
That being said, I wonder what it would feel like if your hand came in contact with the curtain of hot air.
Well, I wonder what temperature the curtain is supposed
to be.
It
may not be at the same temperature as whatever the internal temperature of the oven is.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it does sound like that could be a toasty encounter. I mean, granted, air is a poor conductor of heat. It's not like you would immediately get burned.
Yeah.
But you would feel how hot it was pretty quickly.
Well, we've probably had the experience if you've peeked in an oven, like opening the door up and having the hot air come out and kind of scald your face. But I bet one thing you've noticed is it's even worse if there's something steaming in the oven.
Yes. Yeah. Because, well, I mean, then you've got water, which is a better conductor in the sense that once it hits you, it's going to continue to release that heat.
Uh-huh.
It's not a better conductor so much as it holds on to that heat pretty well. And then when it gets on you, steam burns are no joke.
Yeah.
But anyway, so creating this curtain would help reduce the heat loss from people being nosy and opening up the oven door before they're supposed to.
So depending on how expensive that would be to do, how safe it would be, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I might just kind of go with, like, maybe some text on the door that says, do not open during cooking.
Yeah. I mean, I could see this in, I don't know, because in a professional kitchen, people would know better. But but it's hard for me to imagine something quite that extravagant in a home kitchen. Although, to be fair, we've seen some pretty extravagant appliances come out over the last, 10 years. So,
right.
Well, let's talk about some of the other advances that they've proposed.
Okay, here's one that's incredibly simple. They just suggest adding more reflective surfaces inside of the oven to create more even browning during broiling.
Yeah, they actually talk about how in broiling, a lot of people will create kind of almost like a collar out of aluminum foil.
Yeah, like home hacks that just have like foil things to reflect more of the heat back in.
Right. And they said, well, there's no reason why oven manufacturers couldn't just build this in to begin with so that it's part of the system as opposed to something that people have to hack together to make it happen.
Yeah. Another argument they make is that while we're talking about broilers, you could replace the flame.
Yeah. Now,
this is assuming you've got a gas broiler.
Yep.
You could replace the flame broilers with gas catalysis.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, so what they say is you could have flameless catalytic broilers that would take incoming gas, just regular, gas, and then filter it through a catalytic metal that's bound to a ceramic plate. And the catalytic metal would make the gas oxidize in the presence of air, and this gives off carbon dioxide, water vapor, and heat. And then the heat gets absorbed by the ceramic plate, and then the plate radiates it evenly throughout the oven. They claim this browns food more evenly and is very energy efficient.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we can't assess the veracity of these claims.
Yeah. Jonathan and I have not done extensive testing on prototype ovens.
No.
But I guess we'll just have to take their word for it at this point. Though I will note that though I usually wouldn't recommend reading the comments on an article, the comments below this article were interesting. A lot of them seem to be from the engineering readership of the IEEE spectrum, arguing with the wisdom of some of the suggestions made in this article.
Interesting. And they also had some other suggestions as well, including getting rid of that window so that all the interior-facing surfaces of the oven were pretty much identical. You don't have to worry about that one surface no longer radiating heat back at the same level as everything else.
But Jonathan, if you get rid of the window, how are you going to check on your food without opening the door up?
You put a camera in it.
Hey, now that's pretty smart. And that's actually one feature of a product that we're going to talk about later in the episode.
Yeah, actually, I've seen a couple of different appliance manufacturers talk about having cameras installed inside the ovens to be able to track that kind of stuff without, again, having to peer through a grease-stained window or crack open the oven door and ruin everything, and now the souffle will go crazy and rampage through the town.
Right.
So there was that. And then we talked a little bit about some of the alternatives to the electric and gas ovens, or the typical electric ovens anyway. The typical electrical oven has heating elements that you are essentially giant resistors, right?
Yeah,
you run
big
current.
Insulators. They get hot when the electricity goes through them.
Yeah, you run the current through them, and because they resist the flow of electricity, that a lot of that energy is converted over to heat, and that's what you use to heat stuff up. Well, there are other ways you can use electricity to generate heat, although not directly or as directly as that. For example, halogen lamps.
Oh, wow.
This is like a really giant industry-sized version of an easy-bake oven, which would just use a tiny little light bulb.
But
you use a halogen lamp to generate heat and cook food, and it has the same basic setup as any other oven, although in this case the heating chamber may be made out of glass instead of the stainless steel or whatever material, ceramic, whatever tiled materials the oven that you would be using normally.
But it's radiant heat.
It is. And it can distribute the heat with fans, so there's also convection cooking in there.
Yeah.
But the heat itself comes from the halogen lamp, which is projecting infrared light, so not visible light, but infrared light, the same sort of stuff. That heats our planet from the sun. So it's one of the alternative approaches that, according to some people, would be far more efficient than our conventional ovens.
Yeah, and this is also Myhrvold and Gibbs suggest using halogen lamps as one possible way to create rapid pulses of heat to simulate the even cooking effects of a rotisserie. So you've seen rotisserie chickens and stuff
sure.
at the grocery store before,
yeah.
or at the some restaurants have them. You put it on a skewer and then you rotate it over the fire.
Right.
Or near the heating element. So turning the food as it cooks is a good thing to do because it creates gentler, more even heating because one part of the food heats as it moves toward the heat source, and then as it moves away, the heat on the surface can dissipate inside the food.
Mm-hmm.
The authors claim you can recreate this gentle and even heating effect with pulses rather than steady direct heat. And regular heating elements would have trouble creating fast pulses like this, but they suggest that you could create fast pulses of heat by having oven walls that quickly change their conductance, for example. So their idea is that you might do this with variable emittance coatings, and this would mean some stuff coating the oven walls where you can apply electrical current. And this changes the transparency or reflectivity of the surface.
Huh.
And I think the idea here would be that you could repetitively apply the current to the oven walls to have them alternately reflecting heat inward toward the food and then giving it a rest for a minute.
This seems like incredibly complicated advance to what has previously been a relatively simple appliance.
but of course, they also suggest halogen lamps.
Yes.
Like I was saying, that's one way you could maybe create fast pulses of heat to get that slow, even effect.
And there were some other ones we could talk about. For example, using ceramic elements, heating elements. So you would use intermetallic ceramic compounds, which have the features you would want in an oven, that's being that they're electrically conductive.
Yeah.
And also that they have a relatively high melting point, somewhere north of 2,000 degrees Celsius. So they're going to be sturdy enough to withstand the temperatures of your oven. And they are said to be more efficient than other types of heating elements.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also an alternative. But then what about water vapor?
Yeah, this is a thing. So they talk extensively about controlled water vapor ovens in their piece. And I don't know, maybe I'm weird, but I would tend to think if your oven is full of steam, it's not really an oven.
It's more of a steam cooker.
I mean, this is a it's not just a proposal of theirs. Controlled vapor ovens are a thing.
Yeah.
That exists out there. You can buy them now, and there are various different kinds of them, but they essentially use like a tray of water or something like that to maintain a level of a set level of humidity inside the oven.
Hmm.
And this can be useful for certain things, you know, for getting a certain even type of cooking, for controlling the humidity. It seems like it would prevent the kind of browning that you want on the outside of foods when you normally do roasting in the oven.
Sure.
But there are also some variable models I read about. They sound very expensive, but you can, like, essentially turn on and off the roasting versus steaming options. And so I guess that's another thing that you could do if you wanted. But anyway, I wanted to point out again, I mentioned this a minute ago, but if you go and read this article, I actually thought there was some interesting conversation in the comments section where people were talking about some criticisms of their ideas, like how much would all this cost? Would it really make enough of a difference to justify the price and the materials?
Right. Yeah. If you were to say, like, here's the oven of the future, it costs a mere $75,000. You might say, well, you know, if my cupcake is a little gooey on the inside, I'm just going to live with it.
Yeah. I can sop up that goo with all of my paper money.
Right, exactly. All the money that I did not spend on the oven of the future. But there are some ovens, a couple of them, that we wanted to highlight just as sort of markers of where things are going right now.
Yeah, so if you just look it up on the internet, say, what are people touting right now as the smart oven of the future, you know, the most cutting-edge oven out there? So we looked around just to see what was on people's minds.
Yeah.
Now, there was one product that I found several pieces about that was announced back in 2015, I think,
for the first time.
I don't know. There might have been proposals earlier, but it's first started really getting press in 2015, and it's called June the oven.
Mm-hmm. Like Cleaver? June Cleaver?
Oh, I didn't think about that connection.
That's the first thing that popped
June's
in my head.
June's making dinner, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So June claims to be, well, June doesn't personally claim to be. The
right.
People who create June claim that it is an intelligent oven or a computer that cooks.
Now, if June does claim to be an intelligent oven, we should probably listen at that point.
Right.
Because something has happened.
Yes, get inside me.
June has become sentient.
I'll show you why you created me. It's a smallish countertop oven. It's about the size of a toaster oven.
Sure.
Essentially, that has about 1 cubic foot of cavity space. So it's not huge. It's not going to make a big Thanksgiving turkey, but it'll make, you know, most of the stuff you'd be roasting.
Sure.
As long as it's not gigantic. And it has carbon fiber heating elements, convection fan. So it's got some good heating technology in there. It has a digital core temperature probe. Now, you could just buy one of these separately and use it with your regular oven, but this one is linked to the oven itself and supposedly interacts with June's smart elements. So it's got like a this is a probe you plug into your food, and June, the oven, knows how hot your food is on the inside.
So in other words, June, the oven, would continue cooking your turkey when you thought, oh, it's got to be done by now. But June's like, no, this is not the right internal temperature for it to be safe for human consumption. So I'm not going to stop cooking just yet.
Well, I haven't used a June oven, and the details on that are a little bit difficult, but it seems that it could have that functionality as long as it had the right programming.
So not necessarily outwardly stated as this is a feature, but is possible that that could be a feature.
Yes.
Based upon the vague wording that we do have access to.
Yes.
All right.
There are also weight sensors that mean you could use the top of the oven as a kitchen scale. That sounds handy, but then again, you could also just have a separate kitchen scale.
Yeah, but Joe, come on. This way, you save space.
It's
true. I don't
know
how many counters you got in your kitchen, Joe, but I got so few counters, I gotta maximize the space I got.
That's true. If you have very little counter space, this might actually be useful.
Yeah.
I could see
actually,
that.
I like that idea a lot. Although it does suggest to me that you would probably have to, you know, constantly be cleaning the top of your oven. I mean, you would likely be using little containers, and you'd have to weigh the containers first.
That way, you know how much 4 ounces of honey. I just poured 4 ounces of honey directly on top of the
oven.
Yeah. Okay. What was I making? Why? 4 ounces of honey in it?
I don't know. Maybe it was like a very, very sweet bread.
Yeah, maybe. So of course it has Wi-Fi connectivity, which is needed for system updates, but also this is so you can connect to your phone for the smart elements. So being a smart oven, it connects to an app on your smartphone for remote cooking, which means you can use your phone to adjust temperature, time, and you can get push notifications when your food is ready if you're, I don't know, not in a position to hear the oven.
Yeah.
So that's not bad, but
I was out working on the car in the garage.
Exactly. So we've talked about functionality like this before as a sort of obvious place for kitchen appliances to go for a while. Yeah. And so this is sort of the Internet of Things applied to the kitchen.
Sure.
And this isn't the only oven that offers connectivity and links to a smartphone app. Some full-size ovens already on the market have versions of this, though. Just from a quick peek at the reviews, it didn't sound like most of these apps were very impressive yet.
I think it's the same path we saw smart TVs take. Mm-hmm. So when smart TVs first came out, it was all about the widgets that you would have on your screen, which really just took up screen space and were not terribly responsive or necessarily helpful. And so it ended up being kind of a non-starter for a lot of people. It wasn't until about 3 or 4 generations later that we started seeing smart TVs that actually work the way people want them to.
Yeah. So the app also has some sort of recipe library feature. I'm honestly never really impressed with stuff like this because we already have a search pole recipe library. It's called the Internet.
Hang on, though. If it has a direct line to Chef Watson...
Okay. Well, no, okay. I do want to be fair. I guess I can see the appeal of a specialized library, like if it has instructions tailored specifically to this oven.
Right. So it can tell you exactly how long how long it needs to cook because it knows all the parameters, right?
Or if it doesn't even need to tell you, like if select a recipe for the oven, as long as you put the right ingredients in, it knows automatically what to do and just does it itself.
Right. So your job is just the prep and putting it together, and then it takes care of everything else.
Yeah, so if that is a feature that its smartness offers, that might be a helpful feature to somebody.
Cool.
But then again, I would say if the oven does actually need special instructions, that makes me worry that it will not perform as expected on standard recipes written for standard ovens.
We'll talk a little bit more about that in the other oven that I'll be covering in just a minute.
Yeah, so then there's another feature, and I think this one for me is the real, true big selling point. Internal digital camera, heat resistant. So it's got what it calls food recognition. Supposedly the oven has some ability to look at what food you stick inside it and to make cooking recommendations to match. And so this might be useful, especially to novice cooks, but I'm a little skeptical. I think they're trying to be humble about it. They're not saying like it's going to recognize anything you put in there.
Right.
But it might recognize some things.
I mean, again, considering the variation of food, it's hard for me to imagine how that works. I mean, granted, we've seen things about machine learning, like the whole idea that AI can learn the concept of a cat by looking at all these different pictures of cats and be able to tell the difference in general between cats and people, with some exceptions.
Somehow I doubt it's quite there.
Yeah.
But here's where I think the real serious appeal is, at least to me. You can see what your food looks like remotely via video feed to your smartphone, and the oven software will create time-lapse video of the cooking process.
Now, this will clearly be a huge hit. Did you remember a few years ago when Netflix had a thing where they released on April Fool's Day... I think it was a video of bacon cooking, but it was backwards. So in other words, it started at the end where bacon was fully cooked. And then if you watched it over the course of like 45 minutes, you would watch the bacon uncook.
That's kind of cool.
45 minutes, Joe.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I mean, I had it on. I wouldn't say that I watched it the whole time, but I definitely had it on.
No, this seems very useful for making GIFs, and it seems useful for, definitely going to be useful for people who, for example, run a food blog or something like
that.
Oh,
sure, yeah.
They want to show how the food looks when it's cooking.
If you've got a YouTube channel and it's all about ways to cook different things, this could be a really useful tool.
Yeah, so the camera seems to me like hands down the most appealing part of this product, especially that you can check the camera from your phone.
Right.
So you can be in the other room and look at what your food looks like right now.
Yes. This is what I could be eating if only I were in the other room.
No, I think that's actually a pretty cool feature if it could be affordable and stuff
sure.
like that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good point. If it could be affordable. So how much is this oven going to cost?
Well, the last figure I saw is that it's going to be about $1,500.
That's a pretty, I mean, this is like a countertop oven, though.
Yeah,
right?
There are full size ovens that don't cost this much.
Yeah, this isn't a full oven with stovetop. This is a countertop appliance that you could put next to your microwave.
Yes, that's true. Mm. And now I do want to say it's not the only oven on the market with a camera. I did a search and found some press about an Electrolux oven that also has a built-in camera and smart connectivity, though the camera appears to be in the handle peeking through the window rather than inside the oven.
So it's essentially the same view you would have if you were bent down looking through the little window.
Yeah, so I think the inside the oven view is kind of crucial, the heat-resistant camera that can look down from the ceiling of the oven and see with clarity and high res what's actually happening inside. Thumbs up for that.
Yeah. I love the idea that you can have like the equivalent of food selfies in that approach.
But the product has not been released yet. June got some press in 2015, was supposed to ship in spring 2016. Obviously, that hasn't happened yet. And the ship date has been pushed back to the end of 2016.
Well, I want to talk about another one that's not too different from what you were just talking about, apart from like one or two important points, called the Tovala oven. And this one is, again, about the size of like a microwave oven. It's a countertop oven, mm-hmm. so similar to June in that respect. But this one actually can use different ways to cook food, including conventional oven, the convection oven approach, and also steaming. And the big selling point is that it can automatically set itself to cook prepackaged fresh foods automatically. So in other words, you would subscribe to this food service. It's kind of like the Keurig coffee maker of ovens, right? Like you would buy, you get fresh ingredients that are already pre-seasoned, pre-prepared. They're in a little package that's got a barcode on the top. You scan the barcode with this device, this oven. You remove the foil that's at the top of it. You place the container in, and it does all the rest of the work. It cooks it exactly as long as it needs to in the right method. And then afterward, you're supposed to end up with a perfectly cooked dish of whatever it was that you ordered, which is a very clever approach, right? This idea of I don't have to worry about all the prep work, which is very time consuming. I get fresh ingredients as opposed to frozen.
You don't have to deal with like food recognition if you have a barcode.
Right. It knows immediately which recipe that is, and it already follows the pre-programmed steps that it has to follow in order to cook that particular meal.
Yeah.
You can also use it as an oven. And it also has a smartphone component where you can use a smartphone to control the oven. You select which method of cooking and what temperature and all that kind of stuff. So you can use it like a regular oven too. You don't have to follow this prefab approach. But if you did, then it makes things fairly simple. And I can see the appeal for this, definitely. I mean, especially when you see services like Blue Apron out there where you can order meals and essentially it's all the ingredients and then you prepare it and you put it together and cook it. That's, you know, fairly popular. But imagine one where you don't have to do all the prep work and it's just super fast. And it's fresh food as opposed to frozen food. I could see the appeal. This one is priced at around $400, and it started off as a Kickstarter campaign, although the creators say the reason they went with the Kickstarter route was not to fund the company, but rather to help build up awareness. So in other words, they said that they were going to be making this anyway. Don't know how it got through Kickstarter that way, But then I don't always understand how Kickstarter approves certain things and disapproves other things.
You got me. I have no idea.
But this was it was kind of like a marketing campaign as opposed to we need the starting capital to actually put this thing together. At least that's what they have said. So I'm keeping an eye on this because if it actually works as advertised and people have a good impression of it, I could see myself getting something like this because I could imagine it being really useful on those days when I walk home. By the time I get to the house, I'm tired. It's an hour of walking. And I would like to be able to rest. And I'm the cook in our family. So I start to have incredible sympathy for my poor mom who would come home from a full day of teaching elementary school to a home.
Got to make lasagna for Jonathan on a hot summer's day.
A home with two kids who are like, what's for dinner? As soon as she walked through the door.
Oh.
So, I love you, Mom. So I feel a lot of sympathy for her these days. And something like this, which would be incredibly convenient, if in fact it works as it is proposed to do, seems really attractive to me.
Yeah, well, we seem yet again, this often happens with cutting-edge technologies where we're in a sort of middle period of smartness.
Yeah.
We're getting smart ovens, but it might be right to call them sophomoric. You know, they're sort of smart. Now, if an oven could be really smart, like really, truly smart, then obviously that would be a big help to lots of people. But there's I have a lot of questions with stuff at this point. Like I would be curious to see how something like June works once it's actually released. How the food recognition elements and things like this that have been claimed in their marketing in the past, to what extent does stuff like that really work so far?
Yeah. Does it really have an impact, or is it just, again, a gimmick to sell a particular brand of technology?
Yeah, I mean, if you could take the human guesswork out of cooking and just put some cookie batter in and have the oven know when the cookies are ready, when they're ready, it turns itself off and opens the door. Okay, I mean, that seems cool, but
yeah.
do you trust it?
Right. That's a question that I think right now we'd say probably no.
Yeah.
But maybe the answer no won't be no forever.
So I've got another basic functionality that I could personally see being very useful in ovens in the future. And that would be the ability to have adaptive smart cooking or adaptive automated smart cooking based on food temperature as opposed to oven temperature.
Okay.
And so you would probably want to have the ability to have multiple different readers and different points of input. But here's an example. So you're making a standing rib roast on Christmas Day. It's a big, expensive piece of meat, and you don't want to mess it up. Now, ideally, this piece of meat should have a gentle pink medium rare on the inside and be crackling, crusty, dark brown on the outside. This difference is ideal, but it's often difficult to achieve because there are lots of different tricks and strategies cooks have to use to try to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not interested in reading up on all the best recipes and tricks to get that contrast between the medium rare exterior and the crispy dark brown outside, you could just tell the oven that, well, I want the roast when it's done to have an internal temperature of 130 degrees Fahrenheit and the exterior to be this color.
Mm-hmm.
And if the oven's smart enough to know how to do that without you messing with it over and over again, that seems like that would be useful.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, when you get to the more complicated types of dishes that you would have to deal with that typically require a greater knowledge and expertise, something like a really smart oven would become an incredibly handy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things like the roast you were talking about, or a souffle, something where,
right,
you know, you're like,
oh yeah, the souffle is an example of a thing that like 30 seconds of difference, I think, can just ruin it.
Right. So that this is where it would really come in handy. And while maybe we would all love to have the skill set of a master chef, truth is most of us don't have the time and energy to devote to getting to that level of expertise. So it sure would be nice to have technologies pick up the slack.
You know, there's another thing that I do want to be fair here also. I think I may have a prejudice against smart ovens and new types of cooking technologies like this because I've got sunk costs. Like, I've spent a lot of time in my life already trying to develop skills and strategies for working with dumb ovens. And so it could just be me going like, I don't need that. I've learned all this stuff already.
Yeah. See, I've gotten to the point where I learned all that stuff, but if it's going to save me time and I can go and play some more Xbox while my oven takes care of everything, mm-hmm. I'm going to go that route.
While you watch it bake on your smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not much. I don't use the oven all that much in my stuff. I do some roasted vegetables, and that's like my thing. Otherwise, the oven is my wife's domain, and the stovetop is my kingdom.
Ah.
So that is kind of, and the grill as well. That is kind of where I rule over that area. And then my wife is more likely to use the oven than I am. But that's perhaps why I would be ready to hand that stuff over to the robots. Mm-hmm. I don't really deal with it that much already.
Okay, here's a question. If we all start having ovens that have cameras in them watching our food cook, mm-hmm. is the government going to start spying on our food?
What do you mean start? So on that note, that pretty much wraps up this episode of Forward Thinking. If you guys have any suggestions for future episodes or you got some questions or comments, feel free to send them our way. Our email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. At Twitter, we're fwthinking. If you search fwthinking in Facebook, we'll pop right up. You can leave us a message there, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CenturTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.